This is Book Public from Texas Public Radio. I'm Yvette Benavides. Andrew Porter joins me today to discuss his latest novel, The Imagined Life. When the novel, The Imagined Life, opens, Stephen Mills is recalling something that happened when he was an adolescent. On the surface, it was something fairly mundane. Stephen witnesses his parents, and their behavior isn't that unexpected or unusual. They're drinking out by the pool with their friends. Some people smoke. The partygoers are loud and seem to be enjoying themselves. But then Stephen sees something through the window of his room. Down below at the party, something has gone very wrong. Soon after, Stephen's father seems to have changed. His mother is looking and acting different, too. She's tired, depleted. She even seems something close to hopeless. But the thing is, Stephen's father had always been given to low moods, shifts in moods. He was charismatic, too. He was a college professor, and while he was, by all accounts, brilliant, the path to tenure in this profession is not without its tensions and troubles. What was happening to Stephen's father? And then, what about Stephen? He's just an adolescent boy trying to understand his parents, especially his father. His father's mercurial moods, his disconnection, and then his disappearance. Stephen's adult life is influenced by these absences. As an adult, he decides he'll go on a self-imposed odyssey to find out what happened to his father. Will he be able to come to terms with what he finds out? I spoke to Andrew Porter about his novel, The Imagined Life. Well, Andrew, can you just tell us what this novel is about and just kind of set the table for us?
Sure. So it's set in California, and it's about a man named Stephen Mills, who at age 50 decides to go back and try to figure out what happened to his father, who was this brilliant college professor who disappeared in 1984 when Stephen was 12. And so the story takes place partly in the past in 1984 and partly in the present as Stephen drives up the coast talking to his father's old friends and colleagues and trying to figure out what happened to him. So it's partly a mystery, but it's also very much a father-son story and a mother-son story and a family story.
So it has this kind of dual timeline, right? So we have Stephen at age 50 as an adult thinking back to this time in his life when something shifted. He was very much in the routine of his family. He sort of understood the life that his father was living as an academic, as a professor, and during the summer or with their swim parties. And he sort of was very, I feel like, accepting of his parents' relationship, such as it was, what he could observe on the surface, and the things that he was observing sort of outside, right? I think about the way the window works in this novel, and Stephen is inside looking out the window at his father and trying to figure him out. But then one night something shifts, and it's as if the whole world changed for Stephen. I wonder if you can talk about this idea of being 12 years old, of a character that is observing his parents, trying to live his own life as an adolescent, but then having these extra layers of complication in his life that he has to contend with and try to figure out, even though I don't know that he has the wherewithal at age 12 to do that. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So one of the challenges with this novel was writing about the 50-year-old Stephen, and then in other chapters, writing from the perspective of the 12-year-old Stephen. The 50-year-old Stephen, of course, is much more self-aware and able to kind of reflect on his life, whereas the 12-year-old Stephen, like most 12-year-olds, is just kind of observing and taking in what he's seeing. And there's emotional responses, but there's not a lot of deep reflection on it, right? And so in capturing that 12-year-old perspective, I wanted him as a character to be kind of an observer. But I also felt like that's what most 12-year-olds are when it comes to their parents and observing their parents, interacting with their parents' friends. And it was very important to me that he was almost a kind of objective reporter of what was happening rather than a character who was placing judgment on his parents and his parents' friends, even though some of what he's observing is troubling. I didn't want him to be judging that. I wanted that to be up to the reader.
I really appreciate the way that you managed that. We would be sort of in the 12-year-old Stephen's observations, where he's sort of like, you know, having something to eat and drinking a glass of water, and then sort of shares what he sees, what he's observing, and then says things like how tired his mother looks, and sort of leaves it at that, doesn't try to investigate or interrogate what is happening. And then the way that you manage the 50-year-old Stephen dealing with the memories of the Stephen making those observations, dealing with those memories, bringing them back to the surface, and then trying to investigate them and put these puzzle pieces together. It is very much a mystery, just as you say. And his parents are very enigmatic. They're very mysterious in that people are complicated and complex. For a 12-year-old person to make these observations and keep them as memories for the 50-year-old to come, I just marvel at the way that you negotiate these particular things, that when I'm with 50-year-old Stephen on this odyssey trying to figure things out, I can think back to what has already been shared about the 12-year-old's observations and myself, almost like reading a mystery novel, starting to put the pieces together. I really appreciate that about this book.
Thank you. I'm glad that it felt that way, because that's very much what I was going for. I wanted there to be pieces of the puzzle that he remembers from what he observed, but also as he talks to his father's old friends and colleagues, he learns about things that were kind of happening off camera, so to speak, things that he wasn't aware of, and that kind of informed some of the actual memories he had. And so in learning about what that year in his father's life was like, the year before he disappears, he's very much kind of piecing together a past that he wasn't fully a part of, or that he was very much on the periphery of.
Yeah. And I feel like Stephen's dad is just a fascinating character anyway. I mean, we know that he's quite brilliant. We know that he's a man of obsessions who likes what he likes and studies what he studies and is really into the things in literature that he investigates or he studies or he researches. But he's really a man also who suffers, I suppose, the way really brilliant, creative people do sometimes. So there's so much going on with the father and much more beyond what I've just shared that readers will discover. But I wonder if you can talk about Stephen's father a little bit.
Sure, he is. He's a very complex character and becomes, I feel, increasingly complex as the novel progresses and as Stephen learns more and more about him, sides of his father that he wasn't aware of. And so I wanted the novel to be very much, on the one hand, his father coming into clearer focus as Stephen's able to fit together certain pieces that explain parts of the past, but also for him to become more complex because these new things he's learning add new layers to his character. And in some cases, contradict either his memories or contradict things other people in the father's life had said. And so at the end of the novel, I feel like you have in many ways a much clearer picture of the father and also a more kind of elusive one, if that makes sense. And so, you know, as a character, he's brilliant, he's very charismatic, but he's also deeply troubled and he's got a darker side to him. And, you know, Stephen at age 12 is observing and interacting with his father as most kids do at that age, which is that you're looking at your parents as kind of, you're looking up to them, you're idolizing them. You're not quite recognizing their faults. Although he's right on the edge of that age when you begin to catch glimpses of other sides of your parents, you begin to kind of recognize flaws, right?
Yeah.
And so I wanted that age was a really important age, you know, in you know, for me in kind of creating the character of Stephen. I wanted him to be at that age when you're just beginning to kind of sense things, but still perhaps holding your parents in really high esteem.
I was thinking about Stephen's mother. I mean, she's someone who suffers the absences of her husband quite a bit, I think even when they're together, even before the divorce. What can you tell me about the mothers in the story, but Stephen's mother? What can you, I feel like she, because Stephen's father is so, you know, he takes up all the oxygen in the room sometimes, it feels like, or had that potential just based on the observations from Stephen of just them outside with his friends. But then I thought there's something very diminished, or it potentially could be diminished, about the mother that was very interesting to me. And the way that Stephen is observing her as a young boy and consistently sort of describing her as just so depleted, crying, tired. Her own sense of herself seemed so diminished. And then, of course, she has to keep it together because after the divorce, terrible things can happen to couples financially too, not just emotionally and every other way. I wonder if you can talk about Stephen's mother.
Yeah, that was a character I really felt a lot of sympathy for. And Stephen's relationship with her is obviously much closer than his relationship with his father. And I wanted that to be a really important relationship in his life. And I wanted him to be recognizing her struggle, being married to the father, and how that wasn't always easy. And at the same time, I wanted her to kind of have a faith in the father, or a hope that things would eventually work out, just like the father does. I think she kind of falls into that same delusion in a way. And I wanted her really to want the marriage to work. And, you know, because it's set in the early 80s, you know, I was very aware of the fact that, you know, divorce was not as, you know, nearly as common as it is today. And there was still a lot of stigmas attached to divorce. And so it was much more common, I think, for couples to just stay together. And whereas, you know, if this novel is happening now, she might have left the father, right? She, because it's set when it's set, she's trying to make it work, right? And she's recognizing that it's really essential for the family that she does her best to make it work. But I felt a lot of sympathy for her, and I really wanted Stephen to be recognizing just how difficult this whole year in the mother's life was.
You know, also, I want to talk about California. It's such an interesting place for this odyssey that Stephen embarks on. Can you talk about California? It's just so much fun to read about, you know, the PCH and just the whole thing. I wonder if you can talk about that.
Sure. So just to give you a little context, you know, my family has been out in California since sort of the mid-90s. And so I've really thought of it as my home outside of San Antonio. And during the pandemic, I was very much missing California and the fact that I wasn't able to travel there and see my family. It's a place I usually go several times a year. And so when I started working on this novel, one of the reasons that I decided to commit to it was because I knew that if I did, I'd be able to kind of visit California in my imagination, at least for a few hours every day during that difficult time. And so it was very much an escape. And I loved immersing myself in the world of it. I tried to put a lot of effort into bringing the world of California, the atmosphere of California, to life in the novel, because it was really pleasurable for me to kind of imagine it. So I had a lot of fun doing that. I hope that my love for California comes through somehow in the details and the description, but I wanted it to very much be a California novel. Certainly, you know, when we think of California symbolically, right, it's a place of reinvention, right? It's, you know, the American myth of the West. And I wanted that to be part of the backdrop of the novel too, this family that's moving from Pennsylvania to California with the hope of everything kind of working out.
Andrew, the themes of familial relationships, of coming of age with Stephen, and the way the novel helps us think about our parents as flawed, as you said, as people like Stephen's father, who is a very mysterious character, a very complicated character, and so is the mother. And I was thinking about how there's this idea for me that comes through that I've thought about when I've read other novels or other short stories. The worst thing that can happen to a family that could conceivably just upend everything, destroy it, fracture it beyond repair. Sometimes that just doesn't happen. And the family can stay together. You know, the family recovers something, even with cracks in the veneer, right? Even with mysteries sort of out in the open or truths told and laid bare. And to me, that is just such a profound thing to think about. It's such a real thing that maybe we don't think about it so much when we're 12 years old, but man, do we think about it when we're 50? And I wonder about this idea. I don't know how you manage to capture all of what I'm trying to explain in this novel, but you did. And it's something that I think about so often in my life with my own family, with my own daughter, with my own relationship. And then I think about my parents or even my grandparents. It's just something that I feel we all kind of understand in some way, but to capture it and just put that lightning in a bottle the way that you have is just amazing to me. This is not to say that there's any mysteries resolved or there's some kind of, you know, tan-tan, happy ending, you know, that ends with that kind of flourish. But I wonder what you can say about this for us. For people who haven't read the novel yet, and I'm trying very hard not to spoil things, but I wonder what can you say about people entering this novel with this idea, people that have encountered these same kinds of questions in their own families. It is just, I think, the human condition to encounter these kinds of things about families and not sort of give up on the idea of somebody who's deeply flawed and just sort of throw away that relationship. I feel like, man, if we all did that, there would be no families. But I wonder what you can tell us about this very core idea that runs through your novel about the ways, the truths about families and how we look at them two ways, when we're very young and then when we encounter them as adults.
I left this out of the synopsis earlier, and I don't think it's a spoiler because you learn this very early on in the novel, but you know, Stephen is separated from his own wife and son at the start of the novel, and that's part of what inspires him to take this trip and to try to uncover what happened to his father. And so part of his impulse in doing it comes from the fact that he recognizes that these unresolved feelings that have come from the fact that his father disappeared, right? And that he never had all of these experiences that other kids had when he was growing up. He didn't have his father at his high school graduation. He didn't have his father when he was in college or when he was getting married. All of these important moments in one's life, he never had an adult relationship with his father. So all of that, you know, these are unresolved issues for him, things that he throughout his life has kind of pushed under the carpet. And they finally kind of come to a point that it's begun to affect his own marriage, to the point that he's now kind of temporarily separated from his wife and son. And so a lot of what the novel is about is him trying to piece that family back together, right? So there are kind of two families. There's the family he grew up in, which he can't do anything about anymore, but there's the family that he is currently in that he can do something about. And he's recognizing that in order to save the family he's in, he has to do the hard work of confronting his feelings about his father and really trying to figure out what's going on there. And so he thinks the best way to do that is to try to understand his father better. And so that's kind of the impulse for the trip. But yes, it's this whole idea of keeping families together. You know, it's something he observed as a kid. It's something that he feared would happen to him when he was older. It was kind of his greatest fear. And the sad irony is that it does happen to him, at least at the start of the novel. And he's having to come to terms with the fact that in certain ways he's repeating the pattern. But yes, this desire to keep a family together, it's so strong. You know, I think for everyone in the family, for the children, for the parents, I'm glad that that came through for you.
Andrew Porter, thank you so much for talking to me about The Imagined Life. I am so thrilled that it's here. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Eva. It's always such a delight to talk to you, and I'm really grateful for the kind words.
Andrew Porter is the author of The Imagined Life. This has been Book Public from Texas Public Radio. Jacob Rosati composed our theme music. Dan Katz is Texas Public Radio's news director. I'm Yvette Benavides.